You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
More of the same, at least on defense. On that unfortunate note, welcome in to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game analysis of all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of our friends and sponsors over at MyBookie. Go to their website at mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you can activate an offer in which MyBookie will match your first deposit as a listener by 100% up to $1,000. As mentioned off the top, it was certainly more of the same for the Rockets defensively, giving up 128 points, including 74 in the first half, and Wednesday night's 128-108 loss to the rival Dallas Mavericks at home at Toyota Center. It's the fourth straight loss for the Rockets, and that drops them to 9-11 through 20 games. That's a quarter of the way through the season, almost, and they're two games below 500. Not good at all. Chris Paul, again, did not play. Rockets confirmed yesterday that he is dealing with a minor hamstring strain. Yes, at 33 years old, a soft tissue injury is a little bit concerning. Gerald Green still out with a tweaked ankle. And with Eric Gordon starting in Chris Paul's place, what that means is that the Rockets bench at the moment, in terms of guys Mike D'Antoni trust, it's Gary Clark, Isaiah Hartenstein, and Daniel House, three guys that were projected G Leaguers entering this season. And Mike D'Antoni said it before the game, it's the depth that is far and away the biggest issue for the Rockets right now, because it's not just a matter of those bench minutes. Yes, the Rockets on Monday against Washington, they were up 17 early in the game, then the bench came in and it went away almost immediately. Tonight in the 20-point loss against the Mavs, the Rockets were up 7 points in the opening minutes, then the bench came in and it went away. But it's not just those minutes, it's also that James Harden, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, PJ Tucker, James Ennis, your starters, your regulars, they're being overextended, and it's going to make those guys more prone to not being as active on the glass or having an occasional lapse defensively, or in the case of James Harden, having another turnover-prone game tonight with 8 after he had double digits, 11 the other night in Washington. Those things are related to taking on too many minutes and especially too much usage in the case of James Harden. It's the trickle-down effect that makes all of this so damning. Now, if you want a silver lining, I guess you can point out that for a second straight game, the Rockets actually won the battle on the glass. The Rockets barely tonight, 38-37, after they were plus 9 in Washington. That's a big improvement from minus 19 in Cleveland. And for the year, after the Cleveland game at least, they were dead last in the league in defensive rebounding rate, so they've made a few strides. But generally speaking, even though the rebounding has improved, the Rockets have had more lapses in terms of their switching defense, especially some of the newcomers. Obviously, the rookies, Gary Clark, Isaiah Hartenstein, they're fairly unseasoned. And now you throw in a guy, Daniel House, who was a G Leaguer until Monday. When the bench comes in, it's not just a matter of their offensive weaknesses. You expect them to be a liability on that end because they're not playmakers, the reason that they're not at the NBA level, but even the basics of the team switching defense, which depends a lot on communication and trust, those are breaking down as well. And so even though the Rockets are getting better in terms of rebounding, they're getting more contributions. James Harden actually had a triple-double tonight, 25, 17, and 11 rebounds, 25 points and 17 assists. That is, they're getting more help in that regard. At the same time, it doesn't make up for all the other basically just erosions of talent we're seeing up and down the roster right now based on the lack of any credible depth beyond the five starters. And the sad reality, I led off by saying more of the same, because even though it feels like a regression in terms of Monday going to overtime with a rapidly improving Washington team on the road and now losing by 20 at home to the Dallas Mavericks, it's really not that different. The Wizards scored 125 points in regulation on Monday. On Wednesday, the Mavericks scored 128. Honestly, over 48 minutes, the production on the defensive end for the Rockets, it was nearly equally bad in both cases. The only thing that was different, on Monday, the Rockets had a completely unsustainable, as good as it was, 90 points from James Harden and Eric Gordon on better than 50% shooting. Even for those guys, one of them being the MVP of the league, that's not a sustainable rate. Wednesday, even though James Harden had a triple-double, 25 points, 17 assists, 11 rebounds, 7 of 15 from the field, 4 of 11 from 3, still pretty damn good, but not 54 and 13 like hashtag headband Harden had Monday. Eric Gordon, 17 points, 3 assists, 6 of 15 from the field. It's better than what he did a lot early in the season, but it's not the 36 points he had Monday. And the reality is Harden and Gordon playing out of their minds on Monday was the only reason that game was even close. Effectively, what you had tonight was Harden and Gordon, while still quality, going back to more reasonable levels, but yet without any improvement on the defensive end of the floor. And now, in fact, what you see is a normal Rockets offense for the production, because Harden and Gordon, or for the players, I should say, because Harden and Gordon are not going to be able to give you that on a reasonable level every night. When you have this version of the defense, that's generally going to be the result. And for the Rockets, of course, a lot of it will get fixed with the return of Chris Paul. I do think the Rockets miss Chris Paul because even though he's not a good defender, he helps them a lot on the defensive end of the floor because of how aware and how smart he is. Even at 33 years old, a lot of folks think he's an offense-only player. No, he's very heady defensively as well, even though he's lost a step. But beyond that, where he'll help them, of course, is that if he's able to play 30 to 35 minutes, he'll even out the roster to where, well, of course, you're able to bring Eric Gordon off the bench again. That gives you some scoring punch with that second unit to where hopefully you don't immediately face some sort of 10-point run, which it feels like an inevitability now with the current grouping. But beyond that, hopefully you're not overextending anyone in terms of minutes or especially usage in the case of James Harden, and then you get fewer breakdowns on both ends of the floor. The unfortunate thing, though, I'm not sure how quickly Chris Paul comes back, because again, I think the Rockets realize that there's a sense of urgency now. We heard Mike D'Antoni before the game say that he was worried about the team's spirit, their collective swagger. He mentioned that a couple of times, kind of alluding to the spiraling effect that I've pointed out a few times over the course of the season on this podcast. They realize there's a sense of urgency. They need to win these games. That's why Mike D'Antoni has tried tweaking the rotation. That's why they brought up Daniel House this week. And House, by the way, actually scored 18 points off the bench, 6 of 13 shooting, and again, his 23 minutes were the most of anyone off the bench. Unfortunately, it didn't really matter because that's how bad the Rockets bench is right now, and of course, their collective play at the moment, losers of 4 in a row. But with Chris Paul, now that we know it's a hamstring injury, again, soft tissue for a 33-year-old, that's concerning, and the Rockets have a back-to-back, Friday in San Antonio, Saturday at home against Chicago. So no, I don't think they're going to rush him back. The Rockets have no choice but to play the long game right now, and unless they get reinforcements that aren't on the roster, I don't think it's really reasonable in the next couple of days to expect that things are going to magically get better. You're just going to have to hope to somehow survive, maybe have another crazy game like Harden and Gordon did on Monday, but ultimately find a way to finish it. That's why getting at least one of those games in Detroit and Washington was so important, because with the injuries mounting and all these other issues, the spiraling effect, as we mentioned, it's a time in which you need to find a way to grind to get one or two wins to stay afloat. Unfortunately, they didn't, and right now you're in the middle of this four-game stretch in which they look quite simply unrecognizable. And in my opinion, even though there's a few stat lines that are okay, mentioned Harden and Gordon combined 42 points, 20 assists, Clint Capella had 18 and 8, Daniel House had his 18 off the bench, James Ennis had 18 on 8 of 13 shooting, including 2 of his 4 threes. There's a few individual stat lines. If you squint hard enough, you can say, yeah, there's some promise. But overall, it didn't really matter because the defense was so bad and there's such just a glaring lack of depth that ultimately it's just enough to undo everything, even if you do have a few contributions from the guys that are able to go right now. In my opinion, the bigger issue and the more intriguing question is how the Rockets got to this point. How did a team that a year ago was actually known throughout the season for its depth get to a point where right now the only guys off the bench that Mike D'Antoni trusts even remotely are three guys that were ticketed for the G League 6 weeks ago when the season started? How did we get here? How do the Rockets fix it? And why, in my opinion, as you've probably seen on my Twitter, at Ben Dubose, I think the problem is a whole lot more complex than simply saying, oh, the Rockets let go of Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute in the offseason. That, to me, with the Rockets at 9-11 through 20 games, effectively the quarter pole of the season, that's the more intriguing takeaway. Not really much to say about this game tonight other than the Dallas Mavericks, just a better basketball team, and the Rockets, no matter who they play, they're just not giving the level of defense or effort to beat any basketball team with a pulse these days, and the Mavs certainly do have that. Kudos to them. Now 10-9 on the year, led by Rick Carlisle, a real renaissance story, and good for them. But here at Locked On Rockets, it's more about what's going wrong in Houston, and that's what I want to discuss. More of a macro view than a micro, because the micro, it's more the same. We know what's going on. Macro, how in the world did we get here? How do we fix it? That's what we're going to discuss in just a few moments. Before then, though, what I do want to get to and pause for a brief moment is to acknowledge our awesome sponsors over at MyBookie, because without their support, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do, the only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. And, you know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice, and usually the most common question I get, it's what team to bet on. The truth is, I don't know who's going to win. If you'd asked me before tonight, I felt pretty good about the Rockets because they were at home and they really needed it. But if you think you know, well, you should check out MyBookie, because who you're betting with, in many cases, that's just as important as who you're betting on. And that's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie, because I've used them, and you can trust me, they are your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, they've got great reviews online, and their mobile site at MyBookie.ag is very easy to use. So why don't you lay down some cash and win big today? As mentioned, I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me, and that's why I'm urging you to take your business over to MyBookie, where you win and they pay. They've got in-game live betting, they've got the most rewarding player props in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy players a player will score each game. The real perk, of course, is our listeners here at Locked On Rockets. Join now, and MyBookie will match your initial deposit dollar for dollar just by using the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Just visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim the initial bonus. That's MyBookie over at MyBookie.ag, where you play, you win, and you get paid. Now, jumping back into the show, I'm only spending one segment discussing tonight's game because I really don't think there's anything new that we learned. Stunning as it may seem, and it certainly is for me to say, the Rockets just don't have the pieces that the Mavs do right now. The Mavs at 10-9, they've made some quality organizational decisions, especially this summer. The Rockets, without Chris Paul, the defensive issues of the past week, there's nothing new. Right now, Dallas at 10-9 is just the better basketball team. As much as that hurts to say, that's the reality. What I think is more interesting to discuss is how we got here. And I do think it's important to note that it wasn't always like this, even in this disappointing 9-11 start. The defense wasn't always this bad. The Rockets, this time a week ago, had won 5 games in a row. They were in a stretch where they had won 8 of 10 games. They went several in that stretch without even giving up 100 points. So the absence of Chris Paul, one of the top 10 players in the league, in my opinion, when he is healthy, and also Gerald Green, that's compromising the Rockets' depth. Mike D'Antoni spoke before the game about how the limited depth affects the Rockets in so many ways. It's not just a matter of the bench being really bad, but it's also having to extend the regulars and that making them more prone to turnovers, such as the increase we've seen before tonight with James Harden, the lack of energy on the glass, the occasional defensive lapses, the depth issues, not just Chris, but Gerald as well. Those are very impactful, and it is worth noting, again, the Rockets were hot before this recent stretch, and they are on the season 8-4 when both James Harden and Chris Paul play. And for all the talk about it must be Trevor Ariza or any of the singular off-season changes, well, James Ennis looked pretty good in the Trevor Ariza role back when the Rockets were at full strength, and more specifically, when he had Chris Paul and James Harden both flanking him. The problem now, of course, is that both Harden and Chris are not out there, and it's not working as well. And naturally, rookies like Gary Clark and Isaiah Hartenstein, they're going to have peaks and valleys over their first 82-game season. So, in the grand scheme, the far and away biggest issue, and we've seen this for several games now in this current 4-game losing streak, it's that the bench is unplayable. They were up 27-10, the Rockets were on Monday in Washington, then the bench came in and everything fell off a cliff. They were up 7 points early in the first quarter tonight against Dallas, and then the bench came in and it fell off a cliff again. And why? As mentioned earlier, you've got 3 players, the only rotation regulars off your bench right now, in Gary Clark, Isaiah Hartenstein, and Daniel House, who just 6 weeks ago were projected G Leaguers entering the season, not even expected to be NBA players. That's a much bigger issue than the popular narrative right now of comparing James Ennis to Trevor Ariza. And I'm sure some are listening to this and saying, Ben, what does it really matter? The Rockets suck at the moment. Why does it matter exactly how we got here? And the reason it matters is because, as I say all the time on this podcast, if you want to fix the problem, you need to understand the problem. And I would think at some point it has to get old just constantly assuming that every problem must be due to something that specifically changed from last year's 65-win juggernaut. I mean, we've already been through this several times. Earlier this month, there was a segment of the fan base that was believing that somehow Carmelo Anthony was bad for the locker room. He wasn't, by the way, and that all the problems must be chemistry-related and due to Carmelo. Well, they released Carmelo, he is nowhere in sight, and now they've lost four consecutive games. We also had a segment of the Rockets fan base that was thinking Jeff Bezdelic was somehow responsible for the defense and not having his tactical knowledge on the sideline was responsible for the switching scheme not working as well. Well, now he came back Friday in Detroit, and the defense, which had been largely improved in the past couple of weeks without Bezdelic, is now 0-4 with him. Now, of course, I'm not blaming Jeff for that, but I'm pointing out that while he's not the problem, he's also not really the solution either. It's not that simple, because the problem is much bigger than one or two variables when you are a below 500 basketball team through 20 games. And one reason this issue really frustrates me, you'd think that Rockets fans, from my perspective, would have learned from what happened 3 years ago. The 2015-2016 Rockets, they largely brought back the same team that went 56-26 and went to the Western Conference Finals the year before. The entire offseason, it was the one time in Daryl Morey's history that he bet on continuity. Even this year, we saw that he didn't do that, believing that, to some degree, I think him moving on from Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute was based on skepticism that even if he brought those guys back, it was not guaranteed to be the same results. That's the way sports work, and I've said that throughout the year. Even if you bring back everything, there are no guarantees that you're going to have the same results. These types of ebbs and flows happen both positively and negatively from year to year throughout sports history, even with the same supporting cast. But 3 years ago, that's the one-off season in which Daryl did bet on the benefits of continuity, and he got burned. They actually had more health the following year. Dwight Howard missed 41 games the year that they had their 30 games over 500 breakthrough. Then he was healthier the next year. The Rockets also had Ty Lawson, although that didn't really work out. Again, I wouldn't say that he was the problem, much like Carmelo this year. He just also was not the solution. But the point is, Corey Brewer, Pat Beverly, you largely bet on continuity. I know they lost Josh Smith, but they brought him back within a couple of months. They bet on bringing back the band, getting comparable results, perhaps even more, with a healthy Pat Beverly and Donatas Moniunis. That did not happen, because there are no guarantees in sports. Even if you bring back the same personnel, these issues can happen. And now, just as was the case then, and I'm not saying that the team is at the same depth as it was when it went 41-41 3 years ago. I'm certainly not expecting that from this team, even though they're below 500 through 20 games. But the common thread is that in both cases, the problem is way bigger than one or two variables. Just as it wasn't all about Ty Lawson or some magic chemistry thing then, it's also not about Trevor Ariza or James Ennis or Carmelo Anthony or any some magic chemistry thing now. No, it's overall, up and down the roster, it's just not as good. And so the solution is a lot more complex than just bringing back the band if that were feasible, and who knows, maybe it will be. Maybe Trevor Ariza is a buyout candidate down the road. But I don't think you could slide Trevor Ariza in for James Ennis or anyone else in this rotation, and all of a sudden that in and of itself would make a huge difference, because the problem is a lot more complex than that. Again, for starters, if you had asked me a week ago, I felt pretty good about James Ennis. He looked quite good in that 5-game winning streak, an 8-10 stretch once he bounced back from the bad hamstring. Once he had Chris Paul and James Harden alongside him, he looked pretty competent as the starting small forward. It's funny how that works. Gary Clark also looked better off the bench in that role. And on the flip side, Luke Bamute has played a whopping 4 games for the LA Clippers, and Trevor Ariza is shooting 36% with the Suns. And folks, just do a Twitter search for Trevor Ariza, and you might need to cover your eyes, or else you'll see some pretty unsavory comments directed towards Trevor from Suns fans. And I'm sure some are listening to this and are saying right now, Ben, it doesn't matter. He's on a bad Phoenix team. I don't really agree with that. Now, would he be better in Houston? Of course. But if you're going to say that a bad environment artificially deflates a player's value because he doesn't have enough around him, then the inverse of that is that a really good environment can artificially inflate a player's value to where he's more than what he is individually, or that his value is more than that. So what that should tell you with the current Rockets is that if you see Ariza and also Ryan Anderson struggling as they are with the Suns, and that Houston is still largely successful with the foundation, the big three of James Harden, Chris Paul, and Clint Capella all playing, they're 8-4 on the year, it should tell you that foundation in Houston is conducive to some role players playing above and beyond what their usual value is. And because of this, there's no reason that shouldn't be applicable to other players as well. If there was something specifically magical or special that only applied to Trevor Ariza or Luke Bamute, you'd see it elsewhere besides Houston. So it's not like those are the only options. There are players, in my opinion, even with limited revenue, or salary space, I should say, that Houston can get besides Trevor and Luke, and you also throw in the buyout market, although maybe that even includes Trevor or Luke. We'll have to wait and see. But even with limited funds, you should be able to find players that can give you comparable, or at least close to that production, with this foundation. And I think, briefly, we have seen that happen with James Ennis and Gary Clark. So I don't really accept the premise that, well, the Rockets are in the luxury tax now, and they lost Ariza and Luke Bamute, and now there's no means to replace them. No, I think, especially in this system, you can find guys in which Chris Paul and James Harden and Clint Capella, that foundation, can play up their value. It's just up to Daryl Morey to identify and bring those guys in. It really is that simple. And on the other side, we're going to talk about the process in which Daryl can and should do that. Now, as we close out the podcast, the big question that I think we're all thinking about is where we go from here. As mentioned in segment one and segment two, the far and away leading issue for the Rockets, they're getting nothing from their bench. With Chris Paul out and Eric Gordon in the starting lineup, the only three rotation players on the bench tonight were projected to be G Leaguers, in the case of Gary Clark, Isaiah Hartenstein, two rookies, and Daniel House entering the season. It's really bad. And to some degree, the responsibility is on Daryl Morey. It's also on Tillman Fertitta. It's on the entire organization to fix that. So you should be angry. But it's important, if you want to actually get the problem right, to understand where things went wrong. Because bringing Trevor Ariza back, in my opinion, and adding it to just this current group, it's somewhat analogous, to go back to that 3 years ago comparison, to when the Rockets brought Josh Smith back in January 2016 and acting as if that was going to miraculously make everything better the same way it was the prior year. That's not the way it works in sports. It's a much bigger problem that comes to overall roster composition, and it's much more than one or two slots. The big problems, of course, Carmelo Anthony and Michael Carter-Williams, both of which are still on your current roster. Carmelo, let's face it, he was a whiff. I don't care if some of it had to do with discussions about role and it wasn't just about his production. If you plan on a guy being in your rotation entering the season and you cut him after 10 games, that's a whiff. And Michael Carter-Williams, boy, if with the Rockets in the desperate straits they are tonight, if he can't enter the game until garbage time, he didn't enter until the Rockets were down 20 in the final 6 minutes of this 128-108 loss. Yeah, that tells you all that needs to be said about what Mike D'Antoni thinks of Michael Carter-Williams, that even with James Harden and Eric Gordon playing enormous minutes and that taking a toll on their defense, on their turnovers, all those types of things, and the Rockets bench being so bad that it's three projected G Leaguers being the only guys in there, Michael Carter-Williams still can't play. Yeah, we can admit it. That signing is a whiff, and there's a reason why he's largely been considered around the league one of the worst NBA players the last couple of years. We all hoped that the Houston system could bring something different out of him. Well, it's pretty clear now as we nearly enter December that that's not happening. And I'm sure some will say, well, Ben, you get what you pay for. But I don't really buy that. Yeah, they're minimum signings, but again, the system in Houston, especially with James Harden, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, when they're healthy, can play up value. We've seen James Ennis have flashes this year, and he was a minimum signing. We have not seen that from Michael Carter-Williams, and obviously we didn't see it enough with Carmelo Anthony. But of course, it's not just James Ennis. Gary Clark was a minimum signing, or he will be a minimum guy once his contract converts. Luke Bamute, a year ago, was a minimum signing. You can find value there, and you've done so in the past. It's just up to Daryl Morey to do it. Nick Young was a role player on a championship Golden State team a year ago. He's there for the taking right now. there are minimum guys that can contribute in this league. And when you look at what Trevor Ariza and Luke Mbabute are doing elsewhere, no, I don't think their production is completely irreplaceable at that level. Especially alongside Chris Paul and James Harden, you can find guys that can contribute. It's just up to Daryl Morey and the Rockets organization to identify and pay for that. You can also point out, as long as we're talking about the offseason, the Rockets clearly made a gamble that saving their taxpayer MLE, they didn't spend it in the summer other than a very small portion on Isaiah Hartenstein. Effectively, they gambled with not having the full MLE at taxpayer level that basically that it would have more value in February in the buyout market than it would using it in July. Effectively, they think the buyout market, and again, who knows, maybe even Trevor Ariza is in that market, but they think there's more value there than whatever guys were available in July. And part of it was effectively a gamble in which they thought that even if they had to wait half the year to fill that salary slot to use that tool, that they had enough to where they could stay afloat. And, you know, the refrain we heard from Daryl Morey is that it's all about the team you have on April 15th. That's what we heard a lot in the offseason. Of course, that alluding to the potential for in-season moves, including a taxpayer MLE, which he has nearly in full at his disposal. Well, that's all fine and good, but the games until you use it are not irrelevant. Now the Rockets are 9-11 through 20 games. It's fair to say and it's fair to criticize that at least at the moment, Daryl is losing out on that gamble. And the problem is that if you whiff on that, which at least at the moment that appears to be the case, they've effectively ceded control of the timeline to other teams, and there's not much they can do about it. They can't force Phoenix to buy out Trevor Ariza or anyone else to get bought out that might be a candidate around the league. They've got to wait, and it's probably not going to happen until February at the earliest. I know Phoenix let Tyson Chandler go, but that's a bit of an exception because that buyout's been largely in the works for years. Now, I understand what Daryl's thinking, and some of it, I don't think it's just indefensible. Quite frankly, I think he was also very unlucky in that a lot of this wouldn't be happening if the Rockets hadn't had hamstring strains to both James Harden and Chris Paul already in the first 6 weeks of this season. That has a lot to do with it. But if you want to blame someone, then yeah, you can point to that as being a mistake, and I think Daryl would at least be open to not being right on that. You can also point out that Brandon Knight, while still injured, we all know that he was largely brought in because he's a more desirable trade chip on the market than Ryan Anderson is or was. Because Brandon Knight, he's 26 years old, even with the knee issues, he's 26, making only $15 million, as opposed to Ryan, who is 30 years old, making $20 million. And we've talked for months about the Rockets as a capped-out team. Well, that $20 million salary slot, now about $15 million, but either way, that slot being the ticket via trade to bringing in another 3-and-D guy or better. For example, we know the Rockets' final offer for Jimmy Butler, or one of their final offers, was Brandon Knight plus 4 first-round picks. That salary slot, even if it's not Knight just getting healthy and filling it himself, it's more about his trade value. And the Rockets, led by Daryl Morey, made the calculation that Brandon would have more value to them in terms of potentially bringing in another 3-and-D type guy relative to Ryan Anderson. Well, again, it's up to Daryl to do it, and hopefully sooner rather than later. We mentioned earlier the Rockets trying to wait until February for the buyouts. Well, with trades, they may be having to wait until December 15th, which is when newly signed players around the league can be dealt, and that includes Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo Anthony in Houston. More on that in a moment. But in terms of Brandon Knight, I don't think the Rockets were ever really banking on him to be a marquee player for this team. I think they'd take it as a pleasant surprise if he were, but I think in the grand scheme, it was more about using his salary as a more palatable trade filler than Ryan Anderson to get the type of 3-and-D player that they need to fortify their depth. Well, now it's up to Daryl Morey to do it, and until he does, and they're 9-11 and they sorely need help now with the bench in dire straits, yeah, you can poke holes at him for not getting that deal done. But I also think, and I was alluding to this earlier, that organizationally, it goes beyond just Daryl Morey. The same way with the personnel, it's not just about Trevor Ariza or Luke Mbabute or any one person. The same goes for Daryl Morey. Because when you look at why the Rockets haven't done that, look, they had a similar wave of injuries and bad play last December. They were in a really bad funk, and that's when they brought Gerald Green off the scrap heap. And I think they're very aware that finding Gerald Green in the middle of the year, he was a huge spark for them. And a big part of how they won 65 games, ultimately getting the number one seed in the Western Conference, they didn't fall off the map when they had a rough stretch a year ago. And it's not like they had some huge salary spot. No, they just signed him for the minimum to an open roster spot, and he was a big help. And I don't think the Rockets think that that's an impossible scenario to replicate this year. There are guys, I mentioned Nick Young earlier, you can also point to Anthony Morrow. There are a lot of quality NBA players, especially veterans, that aren't getting looks these days. It's harder than ever for veterans to get looks, it feels like, because in a league with the Warriors, the bar is so high, you're seeing more teams gamble on youth around the league. There's a lot of veteran players just waiting for a call. So why haven't the Rockets made that call? Think about it. Because right now, they still don't even have a roster spot. It's not just that Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo Anthony are bad or not helping you basketball-wise. It's that they're still occupying roster spots that could otherwise go to players that could help you. I don't think Daryl Morey is unaware that he only has three players, all of them projected G-leaguers, that Mike D'Antoni trusts at the moment, and that that's a major problem for this basketball team. I think it's clear there are other factors at play. There's a reason that even after issuing a statement saying the Rockets are going to part ways with Carmelo Anthony, they still haven't released him. Why? Because it's financially advantageous in terms of luxury tax to either have a team waiting to claim Carmelo off the waiver wire or to eventually trade him when he's eligible on December 15th. The same goes for Michael Carter-Williams. The question is, can the Rockets wait that long now that they're 9-11 and we're not even to December? Personally, I don't know the answer, but if you think the Rockets can't wait, the sense I get is that Morey's hands are a bit tied. It's up to ownership to eat the money and the luxury tax impact, and that goes to the top and Tillman Fertitta. We know Tillman reached deep into his pocketbook to bring back Jeff Bezdelic to the assistant coach spot, and my sense is that he may need to eat the negative value on the Melo and Michael Carter-Williams roster spots, at least one of them, to open those up sooner rather than later if you want an addition to this team before December 15th. The point of this rant, and I know we're beyond our usual 30-minute podcast now, but it's to say that it's not just about Daryl Morey, it's not just about Trevor Ariza. It's a complex situation involving a ton of variables, a lot of moving parts, and that makes it not an easy solution. There's no easy fix. Now, yes, a lot of this will improve once Chris Paul returns. As bad as it looks now, keep in mind, literally 1 week ago, the Rockets won a 5-game winning streak. They'd won 8 of 10 and were tied in the loss column with the Warriors. Everything looked really promising, literally, just 1 week ago. But obviously, when you're 9-11, it's not just the current 4-game losing streak, and thus, Chris Paul alone is not going to be the cure-all to take the Rockets from where they are now to the championship contender that we all expected them to be entering the year. It's going to take a series of moves. It's going to take, organizationally, a lot of things being fixed. And so don't fall into the trap, just as it wasn't as simple as letting Carmelo go or bringing Jeff Bezdelic back or 3 years ago bringing Josh Smith back. No, it's not as simple as let's find a role player, let's find one thing to blame and fix that, and then voila, it's going to be the same as it was a year ago or what we all expected it to be. No, it's a lot more complicated than that, and even if it is the same, there are no guarantees of the same results. The fix is complicated. Be patient. Trust that the Rockets, led by Daryl Morey and Tillman Fertitta, are aware of the depth of the issues, and right now, it's simply on them to fix it. Stay tuned, because with the Rockets having a back-to-back Friday and Saturday in San Antonio and then home for Chicago, clearly they need some of the answers, at least, to come sooner rather than later. Anyway, for now, on that somewhat depressing note, I think that's an appropriate point to end this, again, longer than usual podcast. Apologies for going slightly long, but, well, it's a bit depressing, and I did want to rant a bit. Once again, the unhappy final from Toyota Center on Wednesday night. Mavericks 128, Rockets 108. Rockets fall to 9-11 on the year. Mavs improved to a very surprising 10-9. Rockets now basically a quarter of the way through the season, and they're 2 games under 500. Not good. Not good at all. There need to be fixes. Will they have them? Stay tuned in the days ahead. Whatever happens, though, be it a transaction or, well, just recapping the games this weekend at San Antonio and then home versus Chicago, of course, we'll have you covered right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on Houston Rockets basketball. If you want more content before our next episode over the next couple of days, the best place to get it, of course, is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also, go to an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook account, facebook.com/lockedonrockets, a website, lockedonrockets.com. Always, you can access our prior content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, or even inquire about how to become a potential advertiser, just as our friends at MyBookie were today. Remember, go to mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON. And MyBookie will match your first deposit by 100% up to $1,000. Again, that's MyBookie at mybookie.ag, promo code LOCKEDON, and they're the sponsors of today's show. As always, we thank them for sponsoring today's podcast. Also, if you want a more optimistic show, please check out Locked On Texans, our sister show covering the red-hot Houston Texans, which have won 8 games in the NFL's AFC. They're hosted, the podcast, that is, by Robert Lynn and Brian Patterson, my friends, and you can find them on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, TuneIn, pretty much the same places that you can find Locked On Rockets. For both shows, please subscribe. That's how you get episodes right when they come out. And also leave 5-star reviews if you can, because that's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers like MyBookie and keep the business model rolling as the only daily podcast covering these fine Houston teams. Once again, the very unhappy final from Toyota Center on Wednesday night, Mavs 128, Rockets 108. Certainly the Rockets don't appear to be a fine team at the moment. I do think they will be in time, but certainly it's up to management and ownership to do what it takes to figure that out. For now, this is where we'll leave off. Again, thanks for listening, and please come back soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.